Good afternoon. Let's begin our session with the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. Welcome to our colleagues from the SSAC. We have a few agenda items proposed. Perhaps I can turn to the chair of the SSAC, Patrick Wahlstrom, to perhaps introduce what we're going to be discussing today.
Thank you very much, Heather. I'm Patrick Wahlstrom, chair of SSAC. I'm happy to be here again, and this time I brought some of my SSAC members. Can the ones which are SSAC members sitting around the room raise their hand, please? And then the rest of you can like turn around and see who is waving. A lot of people are sitting behind me. There are some over to my front left. Thank you very much. As we have agreed on before, these meetings that we have between SSAC and GAC gives an ability for both organizations to, first of all, of course, identify who we are as individuals so we can talk more in the corridors when we have to meet, but also, of course, to give an ability to ask questions in both directions to help understanding and decrease the amount of misunderstanding of the various reports that we write. So I wanted to, before we go into the specific agenda items, do a quick review and description of SSAC, who we are and what we have done. Next slide, please. Next slide. SSAC, as of today, is 38 people. Formally, a few are pending board resolutions this coming Friday, but the size of SSAC is 38. We have had each year. We have had a few changes, a few members leaving, and a few incoming. In 2010, we did a big change regarding the membership management. We changed the appointment to be on 3-year terms, where we review annually 1/3 of the membership. So, in 2010, we appointed. The people were assigned 1, 2, and 3-year terms, and all new appointments or reappointment are on 3 years from there on. Next slide, please. The recent publications we have made include a few that I will describe quite quickly, and then we will go into the agenda. We have so far produced 2 this year, 1 report on dotless domains, which is an initiative that we took ourselves. We have SAC 52, that is a response on the question from the board on delegation of single character internationalized top level domains. And then in 2011, we produced in the end of the year a report on WHOIS terminology and structure, which was on our own initiative, and an advisor on DNS blocking that was a request from GAC, which we talked about at the last meeting. Next slide, please. The current work part is in working groups and committees where SSAC or SSAC appointed members are active, include the ones you see on the screen. There are both a few working groups like the International Registration Data Working Group, but the work part is that we have that given indication of future reports include 1 work party on the impact of DNS blocking, which to some degree partly it is, I would not say a request from GAC, but when we released SAC 50 from GAC and from others and in the ICANN community, we got a question whether we could not do a little more deeper view into the actual impact. So that is 1 work party that is ongoing. The second one has to do with DNSSEC, and that is to look more carefully into how to and what are the actual implications of changing the root key for DNSSEC. Next slide, please. We have our normal outreach meetings where this is one, and we have various briefings to various supporting organizations and others which have requested our presence. Specifically, this meeting we have started to, which we had Monday, regular meetings with law enforcement agencies, and we created I don't want to say like a working group, but we have a task group with a few people from law enforcement and from ESSAC to see how to be able to make even more progress at the next ICANN meeting together. Next slide, please. So if you go into the documents that we have that we created, if we start by ESSAC 50, this is one that you at GAC are very well aware about. We urge people to think about the benefits and compare that with the harm that some kind of blocking might have, and specifically what kind of impact, if any, the blocking might have on parties that want to communicate that is outside the administrative realm of the one that requests the blocking. Next slide. 51, a document on WHIS taxonomy. As I said earlier, it was a document that we created based on our own initiative. We have written several documents before, reports before, that are related to WHIS, where we point out how important it is to use a terminology that, first of all, that all of us share, but also that specifically point out whether people talk about the WHIS database, the WHIS service, the WHIS protocol, because otherwise it's very difficult to say, for example, we want to internationalize WHIS. Well, what do you talk about? Do you talk about the need to change the protocol, or do you talk about the need for be able to handle internationalized data in the database? So we have said that before. We have not seen much movement, if any, in the WHIS, in the ICANN community, so we felt we have to write a new document on that. The second thing that this document is talking about is how to is a suggestion to develop a uniform and standard framework for accessing the data that would provide, as you see on the slide, that provides mechanisms that makes it possible to build different kind of access mechanisms with different access and authentication controls on top of it. Next slide, please. What happened was that the board in October directed ICANN staff to produce, in consultation with the community, a roadmap for this kind of coordination. So ICANN board picked up our recommendation and said, okay, we need to do something more structured about this. And on the 18th of February this year, a draft roadmap is posted for public comment. And on 15th of March, which I think is Thursday this week, there is a public workshop. So from our perspective, we are happy that this document seems to get the ball rolling regarding actually using a shared terminology, which hopefully will help future work that, of course, is already ongoing inside the ICANN community. Next slide, please. Number 52 of our reports, an advisor of delegation of senior character ID and top-level domains. This was a question from the board that came to us, and we recommend a very conservative approach to delegation of single character ID and top-level domains. We recommend that delegation in all scripts should be disallowed by default, and that exceptions should be made only for the cases which are without confusability and without creation of any harm. This document, just like the blocking document, is pretty short. It's two-page background and two-page recommendation. So if you're interested in what we are saying, you should read that document. But we do point out very explicitly that we do know that there are cases where one-character domains are needed. So we encourage ICANN to move forward and try to resolve the issues that we point out so that delegations is possible in the future. Next slide, please. Oh, okay, sorry, go back one. One of the people have asked when we have presented this, so what do you mean by confusability? Because you have confusability already with domain names and top-level domains which have more than one character, and I can expand a little bit on that. The problem with one-character top-level domains is that you don't have any other context in the top-level domain itself that can help distinguish and tell what script, for example, the top-level domain is written in. If the TLD is two characters and one is distinct, The other one can be pretty confusing with something else, and you will still be see a distinction between two different top-level domains. If it is the case that it's only one character, that one cannot be as confusing as the most confusing one in a two-character top-level domain. Okay. Some people then say, oh, but wait a second. If a word is only one character, the eye and the human is looking much more carefully to see whether it's confusing or not. So if it's fewer characters, the eye and the human has much easier to see, detect that two characters are different. But what we have to remember is that the top-level domain is only one piece of potentially very long domain name. So we have to ensure that the top-level domain, which is only one character, is distinct enough so people see a difference between two very long domain names where the rest of the domain names are the same. Okay. And now I see a lot of people asking possibly what I'm talking about. Read the report, see me in the break. This is very complicated matters. But the important thing here is to be careful because as we say, and as also Internet Architecture Board mentioned in their report about similar issues, we cannot undo a delegation of a domain that we see later was a mistake. Next slide, please. 53, and this is the last slide and also last report. We took initiative to write a report on dotless domains. What we mean by a dotless domain, that is a domain name that doesn't have any dot in it. Voila, okay. For example, if we have a web page that is addressed via a link that is, for example, http://example/, that's a dotless domain name. Or an email address that is patrick@example, without any dot in the domain name. Okay. The reason why we brought this up was that we started to see some indications that were some everything from PR marketing then to ideas to people being curious whether they, for example, specifically for brand top-level domains, whether they can use a link just to http://brand/. Okay. So we felt, let's have a look if that would work. And their answer is no. There are two reasons. The first one is that specifically the SMTP protocol that is used for electronic mail require a dot in the domain name part. The second thing has to do with the fact that there is an enormous amount of software, web browsers, operating systems, and other kind of resolution mechanisms, directory services on today's shipping computers that simply do not send a single word or token without any dots to the DNS. So if it is the case that you in your browser type in just one word, it will not go to the DNS. And this is a lot of people, of course, that know DNS say, there is no problem with a dotless domain in DNS, and that is absolutely correct. The problem is that the query or the label do not reach the DNS. It is the case, though, as I said, that this has to do with implementations in web browser and operating systems of today, which means that someone can change that. What we see, though, is that there are operating systems like old Macintosh operating systems or Windows XP, maybe even around this table, that has been around for a pretty long time, which means that even though all manufacturers change their software now, it will take quite a long time before it actually will have an effect. So we were a couple of people in SAC, including myself, that were advocating for this, and I must say personally, for us to write this report. I must say that I'm surprised how much problems dotless domains would be. It was actually worse than expected. I was hoping that we would find, no, this is just a rumor, and I would change my mind, but it was actually the other way around. Next slide, please. So with that as a background, Heather, over to you.
Thank you very much, Patrick. That was quite comprehensive in terms of the kinds of issues that that the ESSAC has been focusing on with the inclusion of the single character IDN issue. I understand that various parts of ICANN have commented on that issue, but the GAC has not advised, and this may be something that the GAC would consider commenting on perhaps in the next few months. As I say, we have been asked to provide advice on single character IDNs, but I wonder whether colleagues may have questions on some of the items that you've presented or perhaps even other issues that they would like to raise with the ESSAC while they're here. You, Commission, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much to Patrick and to all the, or to most of the ESSAC membership to be here. I hope that's not because you felt like you needed reinforcements, Patrick, but just to participate in the discussion. I have two or three questions, but the first one, did I understand correctly that somebody, and I don't know if I understood correctly, the Internet Architecture Board said that we cannot undo the delegation of a domain name, which was seen as a mistake. Did I understand correctly, or could you elaborate on this? Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. The IB has issued a report in beginning of early February, I think it was February 8, related to what characters can be used in the top-level domain, because the current RFC that exists say that the characters must be alphabetic. Okay. And there is an ongoing discussion in the ITF what the implications are. And the reason why they have been discussing it in the IAB is because some of the discrepancies between different software implementations is just because different software vendors have interpreted alphabetic differently, specifically when we go to an IDN context. So far, when we have been talking about just ASCII characters in domain names and similar addressing, it has been interpreted as A to Z digits and the dash, the letter digit hyphen. But the question is then, how do you expand that when you move into IDN space? So IB wrote a report, and what they said in that report is that, which they have said about other kind of things as well, when it is the case that we actually have deployed, for example, a top-level domain, it is very difficult to... I don't remember the words from the top of my head. If that's your after, you need to go back and see their report. It is very difficult to remove it just because it has such an implications. And that is similar things that we in ESSAC, for example, have been looking at regarding if a registry, for example, go away. That's why we have the rules for the fallback registry and all of those kind of things to make sure that the actual DNS resolution, et cetera, stays up, because removing a top-level domain that people have started to use has big impact. So from an IB perspective, to the degree so that you don't really want to do that. So you don't want to make a mistake to... It's costly to make a mistake when you do an approval of a domain, yes.
If I may, Chair, to continue with my questions. Thank you very much. That clarifies. I would very much appreciate to receive, and perhaps also other GAC colleagues, the specific reference of this EAB report that you mentioned. I would be very curious to read it. My second question concerns your report on the confusability of single-string IDN. I'm wondering I was wondering on which expertise does the ESSAC rely for assessments concerning the confusability, which are, of course, issues that touch upon, among others, neurosciences, etc. I mean, the way we perceive characters, etc. Is this some kind of expertise that the ESSAC relies on? And my third question, so that I don't have to intervene again, pardon my ignorance or my lack of memory, but your report on DNS blocking was, I must say, extremely useful for the European Commission. We even quoted in internal reports, if you're happy about that. Does blocking of IP addresses, is it within the remit of the ESSAC or not? Or blocking of other numbering resources or generally resources used on the Internet? Thank you. And if so, would you consider writing a similar report and not focus only on the DNS, but also on other internet resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Regarding confusability and expertise, first of all, let me explain one process issue with the ESSAC reports that might help you to evaluate what I will say. The ESSAC reports are created by ESSAC and the ESSAC and the people that are members of ESSAC, and they are published as they are. There's no public comment period or anything like that. So the sort of the good thing with that is that you can choose yourself with whether you would like to follow that advice or not. It's very easy for you to say, no, I don't trust that report. You have to make your determination. So that's why you ask this question. So I'm explaining to you so you can make a decision whether you trust us or not, to be blunt. So regarding characters, we have been very careful in the last couple of rounds in this membership committee when we appoint ESSAC members to not only are we evaluating the skill set of the individual that we are approving, we're also examining whether the skill set that the person have adds something or covers a gap that ESSAC as a whole is missing compared to the knowledge that ESSAC as a whole should have. So part of that evaluation the last couple of years have been that we have added, as you can see on our list on our members, that we have added people from various parts in the world with linguistic technical experience. That's my the first part of my answer. The second part of my answer is that for this specific issue to talk about confusability, we have reached out to explicitly the Unicode people, and I will explain a little bit later, the people creating the Unicode character set. We have reached out to a couple of academic institutions to talk about, and this is a key thing, is there any kind of metadata connected to the Unicode code points so that one algorithmically can calculate and say whether two code points are confusing or not? And the answer to that question is no. This means that to decide whether two characters are confusing, you need, as far as we know so far, some kind of inspection and discussion. There is a gray zone. It is not possible. It's not a white, black and white decision that you can do algorithmically. The second thing that we found in this report, which was more surprising, is that people have been talking all the time regarding Unicode that there is confusability between Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic, that specific group of scripts. So one thing that we were looking for when we're creating the report is that group of script the only group of script where we do have confusability between the scripts, not only within the script, or do we have other cases? To gather data from that, to that part of the report, we talked to the Variant team that Dennis is running. And one of the findings in one of the working groups in Dennis' team was that there are other groups that have been detected. And just because we that way, ICANN community, in a sort of ad hoc way, found other groups of scripts, ESSAC drew the conclusion that there might be other groups of scripts that are yet not detected. And that is also the basis of our recommendation that there must be more study before we can say more about confusability. It's also the case that we have the IDN CCTLD fast track, where we had an algorithm that we thought was okay, an evaluation process that we thought was okay, that was clarified in two steps. But it is the fact that we have three applications at the moment where I claim people are not so much discussing whether two code points or two characters are confusing or not, but interpretation of the algorithm itself. So from that, we draw the conclusion that it's not even easy to directly translate the existing two-character evaluation process into and expand that to also be used for one characters. We need a special list of evaluation steps that a one character TLD application must go through. It's not more difficult than that. And of course, one could probably look at the individual code points and find 95% of all cases, whether yes or no. But the last 5%, or whether it's 1% or 10%, I don't know. But also to identify these things must be evaluated manually. So that is sort of the kind of work we have been doing. And so a lot of the conclusions we have is based on that when we have been asking people that do have some expert skills, they said, no, there is more problem. There are more problems here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patrick. A follow-up question, EU Commissioner?
There was another question concerning the IP blocking or blocking of other internet resources.
Oh, sorry. Regarding, I actually had written it up here, so I just forgot it. Sorry. Regarding IP addresses, yes, absolutely, it is within our realm to look at that because we are the Security and Stability Advisory Committee to the ICANN board and community, which means that we can answer any kind of we are supposed to be able to answer any kind of questions, including, of course, that we have to do some kind of outreach. And one of the things that we have been talking about, we had a meeting today, for example, with the address supporting organization, is, for example, how we are going to do that kind of collaboration. Because we do envision, not this year, but potentially 2013, that there might be questions regarding IP address allocation and management that we should look at that actually might have impact on stability. Regarding blocking specifically, we have so far decided to look at the DNS blocking, domain name blocking, but nothing prohibits us from looking at the other blocking using other layers as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. I have Italy and Netherlands, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I would like to ask you to explicit a little bit more about the evolution of WIS. We have been talking about WIS terminology and of the new protocols that could ease the access to the data. But you have an idea of how much this, which time frame we may foresee this, and which impact on the problems connected to also the quality of the data, if there is an impact. Probably not, if the bad habits are continued by the registrants or by the registrars. But I would like to know, to have an idea about what is foreseen in this aspect with the new protocol.
Thank you very much. One of the ESSAC people in the room is my vice chair, Jim Galvin, and he is the one that takes that inside ESSAC is running the WHIS issue. So I hand over the microphone to him.
Thank you, Patrick. I think I heard two questions, and I just want to clarify the first one. So you are asking about when this new terminology and structure will become commonplace and be used throughout? Okay. So I think right now the staff have taken on board the document, and they have actually begun to use it. As I understand it, the current plan is to begin to use that terminology and the structure in new work going forward, rather than trying to modify all the existing work and any work that might be in progress. So as much as possible, that's the path that they're taking in adopting what we've proposed there for terminology.
Yeah, but the second question was more the foreseen advantage in using this technology when the number of GTLDs will be duplicated or multiplied by 10.
Yes, and I thought I saw a different second question up there, but to speak to what you just asked, we believe that the terminology will allow us to better frame all of the WHOIS and WHOIS related discussions so that we can focus in particular on the three things that we were specifying words for, so that we can separately talk about registration data, directory service, and access protocol. I think one of the problems that WHOIS discussions and WHOIS related discussions have had is we use the term WHOIS And frequently, the parties who are talking have a different context for that word. And that's really the basis for the terminology. So the goal here is to improve the discussions and ensure that people who are talking are talking about the same thing, because they can use the same phrase for that. I thought I heard a second question from you about quality of who is data. Did I hear that question too, and did I answer your questions other than that one?
You answered it will constitute a best practice that will provoke a better quality of the data, is what you just said. So I wanted to have an evaluation of in which time frame then this will be adopted. But you say that the staff is starting just now to adopt the new terminology. But then this will lead to a new standard. What is the in time? How is the time frame when you foresee this the effect of this application?
I think the answer is that, barring any extreme reaction from the community that this is a negative path and a bad idea, that the transition has started. And it will continue until it's done. I think, as I said, the goal is to begin using the new terminology in new work. So as new things are started, they'll start using it. And work that's in progress will, come to closure and be left as is. And we won't be trying to revise prior work. In terms of time frame, now it starts. And it'll end when the current existing work that's who is related ends, because there'll be no mix in terminology at that point. Okay. And Heather, there were a couple of people who had hands over here, I think, wanted to respond to Stefano. But
thank you. I have Netherlands, Australia, and UK.
Thank you, Heather. On the subject of blocking, I think it's a recurring subject of our discussions every time. I have two questions. First of all, I have the same question as the last meeting, and it's about the blocking of TLDs. We have, of course, the unfortunate experience with XXX. XXX was put in the route in April, I think, last year, somewhere. So it's almost a year ago. I'm still very, very curious, although, of course, this is not has not been a very fortunate dossier for many countries of us, but still we have at least the positive side is that you have experience with a sensitive string being in the root. I was wondering if, after a year, what are the symptoms of possible blocking, what are the negative sides? Is it being blocked? Of course, this is a very difficult question, but still I would like to have some answers in this, because it will guide us also, give us information for possibly sensitive strings which could be blocked in the new program. And that brings me to the second question. Are you contemplating, because I think I heard something in the lobby somewhere, are you contemplating follow-up on your first recommendation, your first report on blocking? Thank you.
So to answer the first question is we don't know. One of the problems that we have had in ESSAC and also that we still have is that we have not really found anyone that is doing this measurement, which is the data that you are after. There are a lot of rumors, but we in ESSAC don't write reports based on rumors. And the blocking that people are discussing is more blocking in the form of, for example, removal of second-level domains from TLDs, or that ISPs that run resolvers are asked to also explicitly not resolve certain domain names. That is the kind of blocking that is more happening, which we are looking more in this second report to partly answer your second question. Yes, we do have a work party that is looking more into what different types of blocking does exist and what kind of implications do each one of them actually have. That is the continuation. But regarding blocking on the TLD level, the answer is we don't know.
Thank you very much. Australia.
Thank you, Chair. And first of all, thanks to Patrick and the ESSAC. These are always very useful discussions, and it's great to keep this dialogue going. On the going back to the who is issue, so first of all, following on from the previous comments, I wear a hat at the moment on the who is review team, and so with that hat on, I thank you for your who is report. We tried to, and I believe did, pick up the new terminology. So, yes, it is being used, and it's very welcome. I agree that the old terminology was very confusing. And on that note, I'm not sure, but it may have been that the previous exchange was at cross purposes, and I just wanted to check. I think that Italy may have been talking about the potential for new WHOIS protocol, which I gather has been discussed in some areas, not so much just the new terminology. I'm not sure if you can clarify Italy, but I think there may have been a cross-purposes discussion there.
Regarding a new protocol, first of all, thank you very much. And yes, we got the indication that the WHOIS review team and others have picked up the report. The only thing they strongly disliked was the actual acronyms that we proposed, which were too long, so you needed acronyms for the acronyms. But we do. But there is actually part of the ongoing work is to resolve that issue as well. The important thing is just to agree on a terminology as quickly as possible so we don't diverge too much. This is supposed to lead to harmonization and not the opposite. Regarding the protocol itself, that is nothing we can say anything about. Because the WHOIS protocol or a new protocol, there are a couple of protocol suggestions that are out there. The ITF has developed at least two others, or three or four even more. I think I've done two of them myself that are pretty crappy, so no one is using them, lucky enough. But what the ITF has done, which might be more interesting, is that for one of the protocols, IRIS, they started by doing a requirement document. We list requirements on a new protocol, and then they went off to actually produce a protocol. So there had been a discussion, of course, whether IRIS should be picked up, but, of course, it's very heavy to implement, and maybe, given what we know today, not the best protocol. But I think even though sort of the community decide to not go towards IRIS, I think rereading the requirements document is probably something that is a good thing to do. But when people are going to adopt a protocol, well, we see the ITF developed IPv6 around 1993, right? And how many have IPv6 here at home? Not many. So it's impossible to say.
Thank you for that, Patrick. Next, I have UK.
Thanks very much, Chair. When I see ESSAC on the GAC agenda, my heart leaps up in a non-romantic way. I hasten to, because I know we're going to hear from the supreme expert on the DNS. My brain, however, is a little more apprehensive because my brain says, I'm not going to be able to follow this for very long on any particular topic because I just don't have the brain power to follow it or the engineering background and so on. But it's always impressive to hear from you and your colleagues here as well. So my approach is to try and sort of identify what is the global public interest issue that's embedded in the technical research and analysis and reporting, and that's That's what I try to pick out. As I understand it, you're doing, as we've just been discussing, further work on blocking, and there's a clear public interest there. I mean, what I would urge is that when your current activity on that particular subject has reached a reporting stage, that you try and sort of corral the public interest issues into a section that would allow me and perhaps other colleagues easily to sort of gravitate to those aspects that are most crucial to the interests of governments and the stability and resilience of the system that we're all here to preserve but help evolve. So that's my first point. My second point is on this issue of single character IDNs, and I wonder if I'm right in interpreting this as possibly identifying some kind of market constraint or limitation of opportunity if this confusability issue is going to argue against single character generic domains. And I wonder how that position, it's not quite clear to me, forgive me if I've missed it, relates to what's happening in the country code area where we do have single character country code domains. So there's somehow, it seems to me in my interpretation, something of a alignment, if you like, between the generics and the country code. So I wonder my question is, am I right in interpreting the situation in that way? It's obviously highly relevant to the trend towards internationalization of the system and increasing opportunity, taking into account cultural variations and diversity, I should say, not variations, diversity across the world with scripts and so on, multiple scripts. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Regarding the public interest portion, thank you very much for the suggestion. We are trying to, in an earlier point in time than before, when we are creating our reports, to think about who our reader is, so that already when we start to create the outline that we think about very, very early what kind of portions, what kind of parts of the document should be included. You point very explicitly regarding blocking that there is a public, the public interest that you talk about. I'm very happy to bring that back to the work party, and I'm even prepared of extending that to say that we could actually discuss with, for example, like we are doing outreach in ESSAC, even though it's a report that we write, we have the ability to talk to outsiders. Do you think this fulfills the need for this and that reader? And we could even, apart from thinking about ourselves, we can take into account to check whether that is fulfilled in one way or another. So thank you for that. Regarding the single character IDNs, so the status at the moment in ICANN is that the board has said no to single character IDNs in the first round. So that decision is taken. And personally, I haven't heard any indication that the board is thinking of changing that, and we're in the middle The reason why we at ESSAC do urge ICANN to, or say very explicitly that there is a need for single character IDNs, is among other reasons because of the reasons that you brought up and others, that there are valid cases where single character IDNs are needed, which means that even though we are not going to include it in the first round, of course it's needed to resolve this issue. We cannot continue to have this hang in the air, because I think if it is the case that it continues to hang in the air, that is when we get the implications that you were talking about.
Thank you very much, Patrick. So you know, my heart leaps as well. Okay, Sweden, you're next, please.
Thank you very much, Heather. Actually, my question was a bit similar to my colleague from the UK, which was pointing at. What kind of public policy issues do you see concerning the stability and security overall in the new GTLD program that we might have missed, or maybe we should focus on and give GAC advice about? So it was a little bit similar to your case question. Thank you.
I think that is a question that neither me nor individuals from ESSAC can probably respond in a meeting like this. That is instead potentially a session or a separate discussion that we should potentially have, if it is the case that we should work together. But I also encourage GAC to internally ask that question among yourselves, because I do know that you have a lot of clueful people both around the table and that you also have as advisors that can actually help you to come up with specific questions to ESSAC. For example, the very specific question, and we very thank you once again for the formulation of the question that led to SAC 50, because just because the question from GAC was precise, we could write very quickly a very short document.
Thank you very much. I have Netherlands, please.
Picking on the question of Maria, we have had a national consultation on the way, on the criteria we should use to assess new TLDs, whether it's a string or the proposition behind it. And one of the main criteria is stability and security of the DNS. But we are very much aware that we are not the experts. We know nothing about this, and it's not our, let's say, our field of work. Another criterion is, for example, it should be conforming international law and human rights, etc. So we have a couple of criteria. On the question of blocking, I would envisage, and that's at least some other countries have also this kind of ideas, that we ask the board to advise on, let's say, specific in an early warning. We can say this, or maybe later, but I suppose an early warning, that if we have we have concerns about this specific string because it could be blocked, I think what our responsibility would be as a GAC to ask experts, ask the board in this case, to make a report on this and to, say to us, yes, this is not going to have negative effect, or no, it's going to have negative effect, this string. I mean, we cannot say this. We heard a lot of around. We have beautiful reports, but we cannot say this. The same thing I would envisage, but it's something else. For example, if human rights are involved, we could also ask the Council of Europe for an assessment of whether a string should not, or whether it should be accepted or not. So I think it's fortunate that we have the early warning, because we have time to let things sort out. But I would say to you, I think we asked the same thing the last time. We would like ESSAC to really give us feedback on our questions regarding also specific strings. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. ESSAC doesn't have any role in the GTLD process regarding evaluation. In the GTLD program, there is already today specific evaluation regarding stability, and also separate for string similarity, which are distinct, and I try to find here on the actual graph for the various stages that the evaluation of a string is included: string similarity, DNS stability, technical and operational capability, which are in parallel to the registry services, geographical name, and the others. And all of those evaluations are done in parallel. So I think to some degree, I'm a little bit confused here, because it sounds like what you are asking for is that you don't believe that the provided DNS stability evaluation in the applicant guidebook is good enough. You want to have yet another kind of evaluation, or or are you talking about GAC reaching out, being able to reach out? I'm a little bit confused here. I'm sorry.
If there's a provision in the new TLD program, I didn't know in detail what you're saying, but if there's a provision that it has been tackled, the specific concern we have on a certain string, for example, when blocking will be done, will this harm the stability of the DNS? If this is in the program, it's all right, but it should be somewhere.
I'm happy to look at this together with you personally, and we can look at this and potentially together identify what you should look further into to make sure that you feel confident that the evaluation is according to whatever needs that you have. So I'm happy to talk to you offline about that, because I think we're running out of time, right?
Yes. Is the short answer. We are running out of time. It is clear, however, that there's going to be a continued interest in security and stability issues related to new GTLDs, blocking, and perhaps we should take a closer look at the single character IDN issue as well to identify what public policy issues may be of interest to this committee there. So may we conclude? At this point? Yes, okay, all right. So, one last comment?
This is Iftikhar from a member GAC from Pakistan. There is a suggestion for ICANN for the security and stability of domain name system that ICANN may make joint efforts with the academia to perform research work to handle the security and stability of domain name system. This is my suggestion regarding the security and stability of domain name system. And there is a question from the concerned that whether we can say that ICANN is at the right direction to pursue the security and stability of domain name system, and whether the same approach, existing approach, is enough to handle the security and stability issues by the introduction of TLDs. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Let me just introduce Ramon. He is the liaison from ESSAC to ICANN board, and he is the one that worked very closely to from ESSAC with the various security evaluation groups that or processes that I can have that is related to the what do you call it? The the affirmation of commitment. Sorry.
Thank you, and thank you for the question. I might end up paraphrasing the question to ensure that I understood it correctly. So the first question, the way I understood it, and if you could please help me if I got it right, is whether the current approach that ICANN is taking with addressing security and stability of the domain name system, whether that is consistent with the commitments made by ICANN in the AOC. Is that the right question?
Yeah.
Okay. I think the real answer for that is it was really going to come from the community, right? I think ICANN has taken a very clear and unequivocal step to say that it is committed to the to working on security and stability, and there are a series of steps, and there is a tracking chart on every single one of them. I can say this to you as the ESSAC's liaison to the board. The board has spent and continues to spend a significant amount of its time, energy, and effort, not merely just tracking to the various issues, but actually working on executing to the spirit of it and not just the letter of it. So there is a very clear and unyielding focus on ensuring that what's been agreed to is not only completed, but if possible, done in a way that continues in a long-term way. The second question that I thought you had said was whether ESSAC itself, as an organization, is adequate to address the ongoing challenges for security and stability, especially with new TLDs coming up. So the well-known secret about ESSAC is that it has no power, it has no authority. We're just an advisory committee. We get together as volunteers and we write reports. We think about what threats and issues might be. We issue these reports and we hope that they are written in such a way that they are relevant and that folks actually will find them useful, right? So all of our influence is derived from the value of the work that we do, right? So it's not for me to say that ESSAC is sufficient. One of the things that I wanted to point out to you is that when ESSAC came through a review, its first external review, one of the things that ESSAC said was, in its charter, there was a requirement that the risk of the DNS system must be evaluated by ESSAC. And ESSAC members thought that it was out of its scope, and it could not complete that job. And that task has now been taken and is currently under the supervision of a board working group specifically focused on DNS risk and the evaluation of risk. The charter of that working group is complete, has been posted, and on Thursday there is a session, there's a public workshop, that invites community members to comment upon what are the risks that ICANN ought to be evaluating when it comes to the DNS system. And once that is clear, this board-led working group will make a recommendation to the board so that staff can take that function of evaluating the risk and the security components of the DNS and do that in a routine, regular, basically a no-drama manner, but at the same time ensure that it's done effectively with continued oversight from the board risk committee.
Thank you very much for that response, Ram. Okay, so many thanks to our colleagues from the ESSAC, informative as always, and we look forward to continuing our joint efforts to understand the security and stability aspects of the DNS and how that relates to the work carried out by the GAC. We will hopefully meet with you again soon and for this afternoon. Thank you again. For the GAC,